I'm Jay Kelman on behalf of Torn Motion. I want to welcome everybody to what promises to be a most informative and illuminating evening meeting. We just went out for supper, and Rabbi Yehuda has a lot to say and a lot he doesn't really want to say, or that his humility will has items he doesn't want to say that we will hopefully draw out of him anyway. But it's really a pleasure to have Dr. Yehuda with us. I'll let Elliot do the formal introduction, but I just want to thank, firstly, our sponsors of the evening, Linda and Joey Fried, who are dedicating this evening in memory of their parents, Yitzchak and Bella Kaftan, and Aryeh and Razel Fried. The evening actually came about through one of our E-Team lectures. I'm sure many of you know, all of you know, that we now have live, interactive, online, you know, classes. And Mark Shapiro has been giving a really, really fascinating series on Gedolei Yisrael. And in the last series we had, he did on the Chazon Ish, Rav Herzog and the Chazon Ish in succession. And he spoke a little about the relationship of Rav Herzog and the Chazon Ish. And in his lecture online, he was sitting at home. We were all on our computers in our homes. So Mark mentioned that there is somebody in Boca Raton who's one of the very few people alive who actually learned with the Chazon Ish Bechavrusa. As I'm sure many of you know, the Chazon Ish never held a public position. He was never an official rav. He did not have a yeshiva. He was a private individual his entire life. And yet he rose to become one of the preeminent authorities, maybe the preeminent authority with the generation with the establishment of the State of Israel. So you know, Joey was online, and he said right away, Jay, bring him in. We're going to do the evening. So that's why we're here this evening. Combination of technology and Torah and learning and everywhere. Unfortunately, Joey didn't realize it at the time, but he has a simcha in New York. So him and his wife can't join us, but he'll listen on the MP3. If anybody would like an MP3 and we'll do the work, you know, before you're ready, if you want to fill out a green card, then we'll process the whole thing, or you can go online. And David promises within 48 hours on Moshe Shabbos, the MP3s will be available at the latest for anybody. Okay, without further ado, I'll let Elliot take over for the rest of the evening, and he'll officially do the introduction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're really honored this evening to be joined by Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Yehuda, who is the Professor Emeritus of Jewish and Religious Studies at Cleveland Segal College. He also taught at Oberlin, at John Carroll University, the University of Cincinnati in Ohio, and the University of Central Florida in Orlando. As you will go on to see, he was, of course, a disciple of the late Chazon Ish, and he was ordained in Israel. He has an MA and a PhD in Biblical and Rabbinic Studies from Yeshiva University in New York. He's currently living with his wife in Boca Raton, Florida, where he writes and teaches and lectures on a wide range of literary, historical, and current issues. Our topic this evening is the legacy of the Chazon Ish, one of the towering figures of 20th century Jewry. As many of you are familiar, Chazon Ish is really his pen name, literally the vision of a man. It's Rabbi Avram Yeshayahu Karlitz, who was born in 1878 and passed away in 1953. Rav Karlitz was educated by his father, who was the Av Beit Din in Kassow in Poland, and he was basically a prodigy. At a young age, people could see what he was about. He, as is well known, never really held virtually any public or official rabbinic post. His life was learning, and he also had an unusual talent in many other aspects of knowledge, as well, in addition to Torah study. He was well-versed in sciences, astronomy, anatomy, mathematics, botany, and so on. We wanted to begin by talking a little bit about Rav Yehuda's personal relationship with the Chazon Ish. I believe you met in 1941 and knew him for 12 years until his death. I'm wondering if you could tell us, how did you meet? What were the circumstances behind your meeting?
Thank you for your I thought I came here to talk about the Chazon Ish and not about myself. And I really ask you not to start with me, because this is not an important issue.
Let me put it a different way then.
Personally. Yes.
When you did meet, you're obviously struck by something unique in his personality, and maybe you can talk about that.
If you want me to talk about his personality, it's not only the personality. I came to him, it was in a way, it happened so. The circumstances are, I was then 15 years old, and my father had to consult about something private with the Chazon Ish. That was quite customary at that time. That was around the year, I would say, 42. And he took me with him to get a bracha that was customary. And at that time, Chazon Ish was quite prominent and known, and people would seek to be blessed by him. So the Chazon Ish started to talk to me. And apparently, I don't know why, he liked me for some reason. And he asked me to come and study with him. At the beginning, I didn't know that he means it really seriously. I thought it's a nice gesture. I felt very fine about it. Then after a few days, I got a letter from him. And I have all the letters here with me. And wondering why I didn't come, and he wants to study with me. So I really don't know how to present it, because this is a very difficult thing. Because I really don't understand why the Chazon Ish wanted to study with me. I really don't. But he wanted, and it happened so that I would study with him. He liked my way of not agreeing with him. I wouldn't agree. Anything that anyone would have said, I would say, how do you know? Show it to me. I want to find out. That was my... Although I was very young, but I still had that tendency. And this is how I became very close to him, to a degree that he would treat me like, I would say, I don't know if a father can treat his son in a better way. And I could feel his compassion. He would talk to me about himself and about his life. So the only relevance maybe that it may have is that I feel that to a certain degree I know about the Chazon Ish certain things that other people who were not close to him don't know. That's all, I would say. I mean, what else do you want to know?
I mean, we can all go home now.
I thought we didn't come to talk about me.
Well, we're trying to understand the Chazon Ish through someone who knew him. So let's talk about his legacy. He's somebody who has had an enormous amount of biography done on him, both in Hebrew and in English. And as with many great figures, there seems to be a struggle to figure out who was this person. On a number of issues, whether it's his stance towards Zionism, whether it's his stance towards modernity, towards Chumrot, towards science, towards the academic study of Torah. And clearly he is one of the key luminaries, really, in current Haredi communities. So I'm wondering, how do you feel he's been portrayed in all of these years? Do you feel that there are better portrayals, worse portrayals? Do you feel he's been done with accuracy? Do you feel there's been distortion? And in what way?
I can tell you that as far as the depiction of any great figure, there is a tendency that every group will try to reclaim him or kidnap him or trying to present him, the figure, from that point of view. And I think Chazon Ish is in that case, since he was so prominent, clearly there is an effort by, especially after his death, but it started even in the last years of his life, that they would use the Chazon Ish as if the Chazon Ish is their spokesman. The truth of the matter is, I can tell you, the Chazon Ish was not just the leader of the Haredi community. I think he cared for Klal Yisrael. He would have resented a label Haredi community. I don't think he even acknowledged the existence of such a category. He knew about Jews. He loved all Jews. He also felt that Jews who are not following the right way, and he said it to me, should be treated with respect. Not being, he says they should be brought back with cords of life, love. But the issue was that he felt that all Jews should be loved, respected, and treated with dignity. Now the question is, it seems that there are sources that seem to indicate that certain types of people, apikorsim or whatever, you reject them, or you treat them very harshly. I'm not going into the details. Moridim, velo ma'alim. In other words, you find a way to eliminate them. Says the Chazon Ish very clearly, and in this case he's probably the only one who so clearly said it, and that's a very important statement, that this does not apply to the apikorsim or to the people who don't believe in God or who don't accept the Torah in our day and age. And he explains it, we live in a generation of the eclipse of God. It's very strange that he said it, because in a way, he says, we live in a period that is no nevuah, no nisim. People don't see nisim gluim, which probably applies to most of the time of Jewish history. But as far as he's concerned, maybe that's the statement. The statement is, you cannot blame people who don't have emunah, and don't perform its word, if they live in a period where nothing should lead them to emunah, and they are in a way, he doesn't use the phrase in this context, they are like tinok shenishba, it's used in other contexts, and he says, in a way, the way I understood it, and I wrote about it in an article in Cleveland long ago, for him, if a person has emunah, and emunah, I don't want to use the word believing God, emunah is stronger than that, has a connection to God, this is a great thing. In a way, it may be even heroic in our day and age. But a person who doesn't have it, we should not reject him, we should not denigrate him, we should respect every human being, especially a Jew, and what shall we do? We should treat him with love. This was his teachings.
What would be the practical manifestation of that? You're saying that any Jew he would meet with kindness.
The practical manifestation would probably be not to act like the way some people think is proper to act, to reject them. It's very interesting, and I brought it in one of the sources that I felt, I don't know if I brought it here, yeah, I think I did, that the Tzitz Eliezer, Waldenberg, who passed away, brings that Chazon Ish, and he says it goes against all the poskim. We know it doesn't say in any place that this law of Moridim velo ma'alim is somehow not applicable. But he says, if the Chazon Ish said it, so we have to accept it. So you see the impact, since the Chazon Ish said it, he was accepted, and this is what he said. So that is a part of the heritage that he...
I mean, it's interesting when you're talking about dealing with people of all stripes, including obviously secular people, the Chazon Ish would have had that opportunity in Israel, right, in the early days of, you know, both during the state and before the state. I'm wondering if you can talk about what you think his relationship to Zionism was.
I you know, one of the articles that I wrote about the Hasbunish history in tradition has to do with his the mistaken notion that he was an anti-Zionist. It is true that the parties who were anti-Zionist would like to get the endorsement of the Hasbun Ish. He wasn't a Zionist, nor was he an anti-Zionist. But he loved the Jewish people, and he saw in the State of Israel a great event, not from a messianic point of view, and I will maybe explain it to you, in the difference between him and Hrav Kook, but any event that saves Jews and gives them more dignity and more opportunity would be for him a great thing, and he saw it this way. It is true that he did not say Hallel on Yom HaAtzmaut, and it is true that he felt that you have to say Tachanun on Yom HaAtzmaut, but that has nothing to do with his attitude to the State of Israel or to the Zionist venture. It has to do with halakha. As a person of halakha, he believes they don't have the power to enact new holidays, especially not days of fast. He believes that you have to follow halakha. But on the other hand, he made it clear that we have to thank God that many Jews had a place to come to after what happened in the Holocaust. So I would say he was not against Zionism. He was not against the State of Israel. He had an approach, a rabbinic approach, that was in a way above that party line, political conflict between Zionists and anti-Zionists. He was above it.
There's a 2-year overlap between the time he makes Aliyah and Rav Kook passed away, from 33 to 35. Did they have a relationship, and what was that like?
You see, I'm glad you asked this question, because I can tell you that what I felt, that many of the official writers of biographies, and some people are familiar with the way biographies of Gedolim are written by parties or by people who are interested more in promoting the party line than in telling the truth. So they don't mention it. But let me tell you how did the Hasbun Ish come to Israel? Who brought him to Israel? And maybe I will say it in because you started about the history of the biography of the Hasbun Ish. There is something very strange which I feel, I don't think anyone paid attention to it. There is something very unique and strange in the history of the Hasbun Ish, which I don't find in any other, to my knowledge, in any other great Torah personality in the later generations. What is strange about it, he came to Israel in 1933. How old was he? He was then 55 years old. Then you ask, why did he come to Israel? He came to Israel, he was in Vilna after, in 1920, after the war, he came to Vilna, and he was a hidden, unknown, obscure personality. Only very few people, really only great scholars, knew about him. And only people who were sensitive people and who cared for people that have such a great personality and knowledge, they cared for him. But nobody knew about him. If he would not have come to Israel and the history of the personalities in Europe would have been written, then came the Shoah, of course, right away. Nobody would have known that there was a Chazon Ish. So who sent him there? It was Reb Chaim Ozer Grodzinski, the Baal Achiezer, the one who was a great leader and an insightful person, and he liked him. He liked him to such a degree that he personally consulted with him about many, many matters. And he was really a very involved leader, Reb Chaim Ozer. But it's very interesting, if you read the history of that time, you don't see the Chazon Ish involved in any political, any activity. He doesn't come to any convention of rabbis. You don't hear his voice. As if he doesn't exist. Now, something strangely happens. The Chaim Ozer wrote a letter to Rav Kook. Chaim Ozer wrote a letter to Rav Kook at that time, and he asked him to arrange a certificate for the Chazon Ish. And you ask yourself, why did he feel he wants to send the Chazon Ish to Israel? Why? To Palestine then, mandatory Palestine. You think about it, you'll find out. And he writes, and I will read in Hebrew, Ari ala mi Babel, a lion came. Bishvilenu zo aveda gdola, we will lose. That's what he says. Aval Eretz Israel titzmach toelet rabba. Be great for Eretz Israel. And then he says, Echad mi'asridim shebador is one of the remnants of this generation. Leda'ati, and he says, Leda'ati, which means, I think so, I keep Chaim Ozer. It's not common knowledge. Inehu min ha'yechidim begodel torato v'tzidkato. Is among the unique yechidim, special people in the greatness of his Torah and Hasidut. And he came to Israel, and very interestingly, and I'm asking, that's a great question that bothered me all the time. What happened? Suddenly, in Vilna, very few people know about him. And he befriends whom? He befriends a maskil, a non-observant Jew, Chaim Grade. Chaim Grade was probably a very nice person, and he saw the light shining from Chazon Ish. And Chazon Ish didn't have any problem to associate with any Jew. That's very interesting. I must tell you something that people don't emphasize. You said in your introduction that he studied with his father. His father, when he was Bar Mitzvah, sent him to the yeshiva of Chaim Brisk. And he came back. He didn't want to stay there. He told his father, no, I cannot stay there. Apparently, even then, when he was 14 years old, he did not like, and I can say maybe he resented, the way of study of the Brisker. And he also wasn't very much enamored by the Musar movement. Then later on, it even developed even more. And what did he do? He sat day and night and studied. Then when he got married in the year 1900, at the beginning of the 20th century, his wife had a store, and he sat day and night and studied. But what did he study? He studied many things that most rabbis of his generation did not. He studied all the sciences that had to do with Torah. He studied astronomy. He wrote a pirush on Ilchot Kiddush HaChodesh of the Rambam, which very few people were qualified to do because it takes knowledge in mathematics and in other things. He studied all this. He studied Tanakh, he would say Esme V'Arba, whatever they called it, the 24 book. He studied scripture. It wasn't very common for everyone to study scripture, and he knew it. In other words, the man was phenomenal. Still, nobody knew about him. And I want to think why. Then he comes to Israel, and not young, he's 55, and it takes a few years, and a few years when he is around 60, then suddenly he becomes a star. Ask yourself, what happened? How come such a great man? He is the same man. He didn't change. The same scholarship, the same good character, and in Vilna is a nobody. Almost. And in Eretz Israel, he suddenly flourishes and flowers. Did you think about it? Nobody writes about it. And I will tell you, I'm not going to give you the total answer. It's not so simple. But I can think about three different angles, like I would say, his personality. He really was a private person. He didn't like any covet. He didn't like. He was nechbay lakilim. That was his very nature. He wanted. He was tanua, ana, very good. But he was the same even in Eretz Israel. So what happened? Now you can say maybe there may be other reasons, like social reasons. Still, it doesn't explain everything. The same social reasons that required his leadership in Eretz Israel, I'm sure were also in Vilna. And for some reason in Vilna he didn't get involved. And there may be other reasons which has to do maybe with the attitude of the other Gdolei Torah to him, which I managed to notice and see. So in other words, he was a different type of a Ben Torah when he was in Vilna, and even when he came to Eretz Israel. And his contributions are remarkable, because in a way, Eretz Israel was, like, spiritually and in other ways too, a desert. And it needed leadership. And there was, and a personal of his type was very important. Because of the fact that it was in a stage where things should have been clarified, and there was no one to talk to, and to get from him a clear, good advice than the Chazon Ish. And people would come to him. Amazingly, Sfaradim, Ashkenazim, Hasidim, Misnagdim. It wasn't customary for Hasidim to go to Rabbonim, nor was it customary for Misnagdim to go to Rebbes, and here all go to the Chazon Ish. And I must tell you, you may not believe me, Chilonim as well as secular people, non-observant, he would accept every Jew with open arms, with love. He never scolded at anyone. I never ever saw him giving Musar to anyone. He never talked harshly to any creature. That is what I observe. And then we have to ask what happened. I think what happened is many circumstances came together, and luckily he emerged, and I would say, unfortunately, people think he's only the leader of the Haredim. He's really the leader of everyone. And it's too bad that the non-Haredim gave up, and they don't see how much they can benefit from learning his legacy.
What do you think the benefit would be for, I mean, here we could talk about other Jewish communities, modern Orthodox communities. What do you think, why do you think that they've neglected this study? You know, there's obviously more of an emphasis on other rabbis. If you go to, you know.
I would say because there was a mistaken image of the Chazon Ish. And I won't, you didn't ask about it, but I will jump and go into it. You know, in the article of Professor Kaplan, which is, by the way, a very insightful article, a very good article, he brings this story of the famous meeting with Ben-Gurion, right? Tell the people about the way it is described.
There's a famous story about the rejection of Shirut Leumi for women, right? National Service for Women. And the story has been told in a variety of ways. There seems to be several different versions of the story. The one that is quoted here is that the Chazon Ish tells Ben-Gurion, the Talmud states that two ships are traveling down a river. One is full, the other is empty, and they meet. And if they attempt to pass one another, both will sink. The empty ship has to back up and let the full ship pass. So he tells Ben-Gurion, the ship of religious Jews, of Yisrael Saba, which is laden with thousands of years of Kedusha, of God's name, of devotion for the sake of Torah, has encountered in the narrow straits of our era the empty ship of secularists. There can be no compromise, no harmony. The collision between the ships is inevitable. Therefore, whose ship ought to back up before whose? Should it not be your empty ship before our laden one? Ben-Gurion, of course, was not happy about this formulation. It's an interesting story, for one thing, because, you know, it raises a central paradox about the Chazon Ish.
Right. Right. And apparently, the story, and it could be twisted, but the story is unfortunately presented in the wrong way. And maybe I will clarify what happened. I must tell you that I was not present when it happened. But I still want to tell you, it happened, I know exactly when, Erev Shabbat, Parashat Vayetze, the 10th of Kislev, Tavshin Yud Gimal, which means in 1952, and 11 months later, the Chazon Ish passed away. So really, it was almost the final will and testament or legacy of the Chazon Ish. At that time, so that's a part of my story, I was not with the Chazon Ish because I still had correspondence, but I defied him and I went to the army. So I bring a little bit, I don't want to talk about it, but I want you to understand the Chazon Ish was not against serving in the army. On the contrary, he felt that those dodgers of army who don't serve, he felt they are doing the wrong thing. How can you let other people fight for you? There are enemies who are attacking you and you have to defend yourself. So I know that he told many people they should go to the army. However, though going into it, he felt that are very few Bnei Torah, and he was under the terrible situation after the Holocaust. Everything was destroyed, all the institutions of Torah. So he felt that those who have a future to become Gdolei Torah shouldn't go to the army, but rather should sit and study. In a way, I should take it as very flattering that the Chazon Ish believed that I have a potential. See, I did not think so about myself, and I also felt, even the Chazon Ish made sometimes mistakes, so he made a mistake, and he thought that I, whatever it was, I could not allow myself I was also a little bit of a rebel. I could not allow myself to be detached from what is going on. It was then the War of Independence and until I went to the army, and I know when it was, in 1952, 1953, he died. So as a matter of fact, I can tell you that, the Mefaked knew that I'm a student of Chazon Ish, And then he passed away, he already called me and gave me a pass to go to the Levaya. But the point is that I wasn't there because I went to the army. Still the Chazon Ish, he was very disappointed. He wrote me letters. Those letters are published, but nobody knows to whom they were. I have a copy of those letters with me, and I want maybe to publish them and explain. Those letters, of course, show a lot of disappointment and a sense of being betrayed. In a way, he felt betrayed by... But on the other hand, you can see that he still had great love and great affection, and he still hoped that things will become better. But at that time, I wasn't there. So you'll ask me, how do I know? And I will tell you how do I know. I made a point to know it, and I will tell you who were there at the meeting. In this meeting, there were only three people. The Chazon Ish, Ben-Gurion, and Yitzhak Navon. Yitzhak Navon was the secretary of Ben-Gurion at that time. Then he became a president of Israel. I don't know if he's alive or not, but he is certainly a very trustworthy person. He has no reason to lie. And whatever he tells, and I made a point to find out from him, from his mouth, exactly what transpired, it fits exactly what I know about the Chazon Ish. So what is the story? The first question is, why did Ben-Gurion come to see the Chazon Ish? What do you think? Why? The official version is because he wanted to discuss with the Chazon Ish the problem of Yeshiva Bochim, whether I should go to the army. In this case, why should Ben-Gurion go to the Chazon Ish? Then Chazon Ish should go to Ben-Gurion. Why should Ben-Gurion feel a need to go to the Chazon Ish and talk to him about it? There is more to it. You see, in our days, we know that politicians will visit mystics and rabbanim and anyone just to be elected. But that was not the case, especially not with Ben-Gurion. Ben-Gurion never visited any rov. As a matter of fact, he hated all the rabbanim. That was his background. He was a real... of this type, he was against the Talmud, against everything that smacks with Rabbanim, he hated. So why should he want to see the Chazon Ish? So the story is, as a matter of fact, he wanted to see Reb Velbale. It wasn't the same time. Reb Velbale came to Eretz Israel in 1941. You know, Reb Velbale is the son of Reb Chaim Brisker, the uncle of the Rav Soloveitchik. And he's also, I am a Korev, so I frequented his home too. And he knew that I go to Chazon Ish. He didn't like it. He felt he couldn't understand why should such a bright young man go to a very Pashtun, and we'll talk about the way. Chazon Ish was very much interested in the plain meaning of the text and was careful about each and every word. At any case, when Ben-Gurion, what did he want to talk with Reb Velbale? Similar to what he wanted to talk to Chazon Ish, but basically in use of Reb Velbale, spoke very harshly against the state of Israel and against Zionism. That's a fact. I hope I'm not saying any Lashon Hara. That's a fact. So the Ben-Gurion wanted to know why. So he sent his Maskir Tzvai, he sent to him, and Reb Velbale said, no, I don't want to see Ben-Gurion. So they asked him, why don't you want to see Ben-Gurion? He said, altit vada la rashut. He quotes the Mishnah, don't be acquainted with the government. Now, that's a very interesting statement from the Rebbe. It means, never mind that you are a Jewish government, never mind the state of Israel, you are a government. And the rabbis advised us, stay away from government. So, now then, he sent to the Chazon Ish a messenger. He says, he wants to see the Chazon Ish and talk to him. So the Chazon Ish could also do the same. By the way, he respected Reb Dolvale, he had feelings for him, but he did not think the same way as Reb Dolvale. I'm telling you very clearly, you can see. He could have also said the same thing. It would have been more in line with what we think about the Chazon Ish. He could have said, I don't want to see an official. Why should I see him? He didn't say so. He said, of course, if you want to come to me, you can come to me, we'll talk about anything, why not? Everyone could come to the Chazon Ish. His door was open to everyone who wants to see him. Why did Ben-Gurion want to see the Chazon Ish? What do you think? Believe me, that's what Nabon said, nothing in the conversation had anything to do with politics or with induction to the army or with women going to the army. It wasn't even mentioned. The whole conversation was focused on one question. The Ben-Gurion wanted to know from Chazon Ish, he heard that he is a great man, how is it possible for the Chilonim and the Datiim, that's the way they would call the observing Jews, non-observing Jews, to live together in the same land without expulsion? I mean, they'll be self-destruct if they don't talk to each other, if they don't recognize each other. If there is a rift between them, how can they survive? Okay, I'm asking you. Somebody comes to a Gadol BaTorah and says, please tell me, what do you think, how can the observant Jews and the non-observant Jews live together? What do you think? What kind of answer would that Gadol give? I can give you many possibilities. But I think the Chazon Ish gave him the most brilliant, the most penetrating answer possible. And let me go back. What the Chazon Ish did, like he did all the time, he went to the sources. He quoted a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Bet. Let me tell you what the Gemara says. And now you understand what the Chazon Ish meant. It says, tzedek, tzedek tirdof. Why do we need twice tzedek? Echad ledin, v'echad lipshara. Means there is, you have to be tzedek, justice, when you follow the rights of people, the law, and there will be justice also when you make a pshara. Means when you make a compromise. And then he gives, and the example that the Chazon Ish gave wasn't cards, a galare card, they say. It wasn't. It was a camel. But, you know, people forgot. So in Gemara it says, Shnei gemalim shayu olim b'ma'alot beit koron. It was a very steep mountain. And to go there, if two camels go up, it's very steep and dangerous, if they don't make an arrangement between them, if they go together, they will fall down and they will, both will die. So, ima ulim shneem, shneem noflim. Bezeh achar zeh, shneem olim. So what the Chazanish really said, you know, you are right. We cannot live together, we will fight with one another. If we will both want to go together and everyone will want to push the other, nobody will survive. But if we will make a pshara, no, wait a minute. So he's talking about a compromise. He's talking, the Chazon Ish had a vision that we have to think about a way for all Jews to live together, because otherwise Judaism will not survive. So what do? It says, Te'una v'she'ina te'una, if one has a load, a baggage, and the other doesn't, Tidache she'ina te'una mipnei te'una. So first should go the camel with the baggage, and after that the camel without the baggage. Okay, so the Chazon Ish, of course, irked Ben-Gurion because he said, I have a baggage. You don't. But many Chilonim, not Ben-Gurion, but Berel Katzenelson, and even Bialik, and other Chilonim, would agree to the Chazon Ish. There was no question that the Chazon Ish represents the Moreshet, the Masorah of thousands of years. And so, what he's saying, you have to defer and let first go this camel, means we, the camel with the baggage. But he didn't say, and you should go to hell, or you should fall, you should go after us. So he really, what he said, the Chazon Ish, is something to me, it's amazing, because what he's saying, he didn't say, Chalila, that you are worthless, that you have to be condemned, that I don't care. You know, most of the rabbis of that time, if it would come to him with the question of Ben-Gurion, would have said, but I don't want to live with you together. Why should I want? You have only way. The only way is our Torah way. If you don't accept the Torah way, I don't care about you. You are even not a Jew. But the Chazon Ish had the vision, the courage, and I think the progressive way of thinking to tell Ben-Gurion, yes, let us find a compromise. We have to live together. We have to build together. But you have to acknowledge the superiority, not our superiority. You see, he didn't say that we have the baggage. The superiority of the tradition. We carry Torah and mitzvot, and you admit that you are not bound by Torah and mitzvot. You see, the Chazon Ish didn't think that the Datiyim are more perfect than the non-Datiyim. He knew that we are all not perfect. He said about, we are Yatmei de Yatmei, we are orphans, sons of orphans. But this was distorted. If it is distorted this way, no wonder that Chazon Ish lost his appeal to many people who feel offended by saying, Chazon Ish would have never said it. He was a very dignified person. He would never, ever say to anyone, you are an empty cart. What he said is, let the loaded camel go first.
So you're saying the story is mythical the way it was presented, that it was a distortion.
Yeah. I'm saying that.
Let's. I just want to raise a couple of other issues, and we're going to then throw it open to the floor.
Yeah.
In his article, Professor Kaplan McGill writes a very interesting article about the Chazon Ish in a book called The Uses of Tradition. And in the article, he makes a statement basically about the Chazon Ish's halachic philosophy. And he says that the Chazon Ish can be seen in contradistinction to Rav Soloveitchik. He calls Rav Soloveitchik one of modern halachic thinkers. And he says the Chazon Ish is actually one of the great anti-modern halachic thinkers. In other words, he really looks at these two people in a binary way, this and that. Why does he say this? He says that the innovative, the creative, was a suspect approach for the Chazon Ish. He wants to argue that the whole Brisker mentality of chidush, of creativeness, that was sort of legacy of the Soloveitchik clan, or on the other hand, the kind of inward self-reflection of the Musar movement, was completely foreign to the Chazon Ish, that he didn't like it. And one of the reasons he didn't like it is that it smacked too much of modernity, too much autonomy, too much self-reflection, and so on. And you can see in Halachic Man where Rav Soloveitchik expresses that the power of creative interpretation of Chidush is the very foundation of the tradition. Right? So, do you believe that Professor Kaplan's assessment of the way the Chazon Ish thinks about learning, about Halacha, about kind of anti-Chidush mentality is correct or not?
Before I say it, I want to say I have the greatest respect for Professor Kaplan and his article otherwise, except here and other few places. It's a very insightful article. However, when it comes to this point, I think he misses the point. Now, if you'll ask me who lived with modernity and who was against modernity in the living style, clearly, Rav Soloveitchik was a modern man in many ways. And the Chazon Ish was an old-fashioned. I mean, you should see how he lived. And so, but we're not talking about it. He says in the halachic philosophy, and I will tell you, if you talk about halachic philosophy, I would say both would not want to be labeled modern. Because even Rav Soloveitchik, when he brings it, all this, and he says about the Chidush is the essence of study, and so, and this was always so, so it's not modern. If it was always so, so he himself says that it's not modern. So it's really a contradiction in terms. So decide, if you're modern, so admit you are innovative, it didn't exist before, and you are modern. But he himself wants to have it from both sides. He is innovative, he is modern, but, you know, this is the essence of the Torah since it was given for Mount Sinai. There is truth in both ways. There is an element of Chidush. The Chazon Ish certainly was not a modern, nor was he anti-modern, and I will tell you something else. The difference between the Chazon Ish and other schools was how do you come to the Chidush? And that brings me to explain why the Chazon Ish, that even when he was 14 years old, his nature wasn't open to this way of thinking. And then some say that for a while, the way the book that he wrote was clearly, the Chazon Ish was a book that is clearly a rebuttal of the way of Brisk. Some say that in some places he tries maybe to show, maybe he struggled with the idea here and there. But basically, the reason is a very different reason. Of course the Chazon Ish was for Chidush. But the Chidush must come after you examine the text. It comes from within. It cannot come from without. And when he said he's against Chidush because he saw what is going on in the yeshivot, and in a way he wasn't as vocal against it, because he wanted to keep the yeshivot alive, that a student, before he even read the text of Rashi and Tosfot, he already engages and they want to make a Chidush here and a Chidush there. You see, Chidush, Leshem Chidush, for him, was not the Torah way. The Torah way is, you want to know the truth. You want to know what does the text say. If you know what the text say, certainly you will come to Chiddush. What does it mean, Chiddush? You will come to new insights of which you were not aware before. That is all. But Chas v'cholila to say that you have the power to introduce something new that is not substantiated by the truth. See, it's very interesting. You mentioned Kaplan. And he himself, if I will read the small letters, if not you will help me, says it in a very sarcastic way. You know, the Chazon Ish wrote Hasagot, like the Rav, on Reb Chaim's book. And I myself, personally, I went through Reb Chaim's book line by line, and the Chazon Ish would explain to me exactly why he doesn't accept it and what is wrong with it. And the issue was not because he was against modernity. On the contrary, he wanted people to think. He encouraged people to ask what is asked. Whenever somebody says to you something, ask him, how do you know? Where does it say? Show me. That was the Chazon Ish. He wanted everything must be punctual. So when he wrote the Hasagot, can you read what he says here? Read it loudly so everyone will hear it.
An acquaintance of mine has made a careful study of the Gilyo note. Willy remarked that the Chazon Ish judged Reb Chaim's interpretations of the Rambam by the wrong criterion. He wanted to determine if they were true.
Now you see, this is the point, and he knows it. I don't think that Reb Chaim himself felt that this is really the only way or the preferable way for studying Torah, but he maybe felt that this would be a good didactic or educational way to lure away the inquisitive students from going to college or to universities by giving them something which is more conceptual and it looks like more philosophical. Fine, maybe. But he himself would never think that his way is a way for Psak Halacha. Never. In the whole school of Brisk, it was clear that this is a way of study, but not a way of application of the material to real life. But the Chazon Ish was had a different approach. Whenever he studied, he wanted to know the Psak Halacha, how it comes. So to say that the Chazon Ish was against Reb Chaim, because he was against what? Against thinking?
Would the Chazon Ish have wanted educationally for there to be more of an emphasis on halachic study in mainstream curriculum in Yeshivot?
That's a good question in the sense that when he got involved in encouraging the young scholars who would come from Chutz Laaretz to be Rosh Yeshivas or Rabbanim, he really had in mind one thing, to Harbatzat Torah, to spread Torah. And even that was noticed by Professor Kaplan. This is why he wasn't so vocal in his itnagdut, in his objection to the Brisker way, because he felt, okay, be Brisker way, this way, let them study. First, it's like saying, Amaor shebo yarzir otam lemutav. He felt, even if you study the Brisker way, maybe you will do tshuva and you'll come back to my way. Whatever. Clearly, he preferred his own way. And I have a problem. Personally, I have a problem because I study with the Chazon Ish. And he put it in my bones. I cannot now study anything unless I ask myself, what would the Chazon Ish say about it? then I know one thing, the Chazon Ish wouldn't like people, and Chazon Ish, so the way of the Chazon Ish is now, for me, an incurable illness. If you want. This is it. So if I sound sometimes that I don't appreciate the other ways, that's my fault, yeah, but I cannot help it.
We hope it's an illness from which you don't recover.
Okay.
We're going to throw it open to the floor if there are people who want to ask questions.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ask people to come up and speak into the
mic,
okay?
Did I speak too much? Also, you know?
Oh? Oh, but the questioner.
Oh, you have the mic? Okay.
We can sit here until midnight if you want, you know. No.
I just wanted to follow up from Dr. Malamud's question about the relationship between the Chazon Ish and Rav Kook. Because my understanding is that they met, at least when the Chazon Ish first arrived in Israel, that Rav Kook went to meet the Chazon Ish. But did they have a relationship afterwards, and what was the Chazon Ish's attitude towards Rav Kook and Rav Kook's vision of Zionism and the
good
pioneers?
Good question. I must tell you that I discussed the matter with the Chazon Ish, and I can only tell you what the Chazon Ish told me, because I was already aware of all kinds of Lashon Hara. You see, those people who want to save the Chazon Ish from being identified with Chas v'Chalila, with the Tzionim, they are really speaking the Lashon Hara against the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was Ohev Israel. And I can tell you, and I asked him quite to the point, what do you think about Rav Kook? And he told me that in his opinion, Rav Kook is one of the greatest scholars and a great tzaddik, and he had the great respect for him and love for him. Now, it is, and he also, when he came, whom did he ask about the Ilchot Trumot u'Masrot? Whom did he ask? He asked the Rav Kook, because he was Mara de'Atra, and he asked him. On the other hand, Rav Kook was then in the last years of his life. He was quite feeble. It didn't work out. You know, usually you think, okay, I will not see him this year, I will see him next year. It was only 2 years that the Chazon Ish hardly got acclimated in the land. So it didn't work out. Then came all kind of stories, because there were people hated Rav Kook, those who were against Zionism. They had a sick hatred towards Rav Kook, and then they felt it's good to lump together and say that the Chazon Ish too was again. Chazon Ish made it clear, no, Chazon Ish, that Rav Kook must be respected. That doesn't mean that he agreed with Rav Kook's philosophy. I can tell you clearly, he did not. But that has to do that two Gedolim may have two different philosophies about Messianism and about Tchiya, the revival. Chazon Ish didn't think that this is the generation of revival. So he had, but the fact that they differed in Hashkafa does not mean that they did not appreciate one another. Of course, Rav Kook, the reason why Rav Kook appreciated Chazon Ish, he didn't know him, because Reb Chaim Ozer, who was so admired by everyone, wrote him a letter, told him, Ari Alami Babel. So, Rav Kook, a great tzaddik, I mean, Reb Chaim Ozer says that here somebody comes, so he came and he was impressed. How could one not be impressed by the Chazon Ish? I mean, he is purity, his goodness. He, by the way, he had a sense of humor. He always smiled. I never heard him say one bad word about anyone. Never, ever. I didn't ever heard him condemn anyone. And he was totally, totally full of love. And the answer to your question is, he admired Rav Kook. Other questions? Yeah.
I'm assuming you've read the book The Yeshiva by Chaim Grada. How accurate is Chaim Grada's portrayal of the Chazon Ish?
I think, my opinion, is very accurate. And I will tell you, you have to understand what is behind all this. So, Chaim Grada describes a certain Baal Machaze Abraham, which is really, that's very interesting. Chazon Ish, Ish means Abraham Ishayahu, so Machaze Abraham, and he calls him Rabbi Avraham Ishayahu, and he describes him as a kind, insightful, beloved person. He describes him.
He calls him Avraham Ishayahu Kosover.
Because he was a Kosover. He was the son of the rabbi of Kosover. He was the second son of six children. And he studied with his father. I think his father was a great scholar. There were many great scholars who didn't reach celebrity because those who knew how to sell themselves, it wasn't right because they were great people, clearly. By the way, he had a brother, the younger brother, who wrote a pirush on Sha'arei Tshuva of Rabbeinu Yonah. And I have that pirush, was great scholar. So, how accurate was it? His description is of a kind, knowledgeable, loving person, but there is more to it. How many Gdolei Torah would befriend a maskil? I'm asking you. He befriended him, which to me shows that he was really unique. He was different. People don't know how unique he was. He loved every human being. And I know I say every human being, I mean Goyim too. And of course he loved every Jew. And I mean Chilonim too. Of course. And I will tell you more than that. He even loved animals. Now, how can it be? Oh, loves animals. It's really strange. I will tell you a story. I don't know if it is known. But I told the story because there is now a young professor who wrote a dissertation on the Chazon Ish, and I helped him out. I gave him materials. So some reason I gave him all this. So this is a story. When he was in Vilna, by the way, he was always dressed like a ballet boss. That also says something. You know, some were dressed like Itzra de Rabana, and some were dressed, even Chafetz Chaim, by the way, he was dressed like a simple Jew. And he really, that is what he was. And he walks there and he sees there is people surrounding something and what is going on, a cold commotion. He goes there and they tell him, it's a little pig fell into the hole. There was a goy with pigs passing through and one little pig fell down. And they don't know what to do. And the pig, is crying for his mother. And the Chazon Ish went down to the pit, took the chazir, the pig, and took him out, and then the pig ran to his mother. So they asked him, why did you do that? He said, the Torah doesn't allow us to eat pigs. But the din of Tzar Balei Chaim applies to pigs too. Now, only Chazon Ish could have said such a remarkable statement. It means that the halacha, the fact that it's a pig, means that you're not allowed to eat it. But you still have to feel compassion because he is a living being. So I don't know what your question was, why did I come to the pig, but I think it will tell you how much. Are there any other questions? Yeah. I see young people ask questions, that's good. Yeah.
If I could just have one more question. It was also pretty apparent that the Chazon Ish was highly critical when he felt the need. I mean, there were parts in the Emunah B'Tochen, I believe, that were taken out because it was highly, highly critical of the Muslim movement as well.
I cannot understand. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'll say it louder. It's also quite apparent that the Chazon Ish was a high critic at times, and he was highly critical, for instance, of the Musar movement.
Yeah.
In fact, they censored certain pieces out of that of the Emunah B'Tochen.
You know that, yeah.
Right. And as well, Chaim Grada makes the point that he was a very strong critic of certain things. Rabbi Doctor gives the impression that in terms of Zionism, he was simply... he wasn't a Zionist and a non-Zionist. I mean, one who's familiar, just with one who knows that the Chazon Ish had very strong opinions on every minutia of halacha. He must have had a very sophisticated opinion that was perhaps deeper than simply a non-Zionist, and he wasn't a Zionist.
Yeah, good. You are asking two questions, right?
No, it's mainly one.
It's two. One question, if I understood you, it's fine. You can ask, you cannot ask more than three, maybe. But two, you can. One question was about the Musar, yes? The other question was about Zionism. Am I correct?
The two parts of the same question.
Two parts of the same question. Okay. It's fine, fine. Let me first talk about the Musar. The Chazon Ish had a very strong opinion against the Tnu'at HaMusar, the whole movement of the Musar. He wasn't the only one. There were other Chachamim, Gdolim at that time, who were against it. Some of them because they felt it's Bitul Torah, they go to Yeshiva, they should study Torah. And the Chazon Ish had another reason. The Chazon Ish felt that it's futile to study Musar as an independent category because he believed that the halacha determines what is and what is not ethical. So he feels, what good is it to study theoretical ideas that you shouldn't be a gazlan, let us say. Of course, it's not nice to steal. But what determines what is gezel? Only the halakha determines. So how can you study Musar and concentrate on it as an independent category if you really don't care first to establish the halakha. So basically, the basic principle here, I feel, was that if you study halakha, if you study Torah, then the study itself, I would say even being engaged in verifying the delicate points of the halakha will make your mind more delicate, will sensitize you. You'll become a more sensitive person. So he felt that Musar he was against. He also felt from his own experience that in the Musar movement, sometimes you get involved in working against certain midot, like this midah and this midah, that work for an Abba. And by the way, Musar, Novadek would work against on kavod, so they would denigrate themselves. And the Chazon Ish has a special statement, even in Manaot Bitachon, that as much as he was, of course he was very much for anava, for humility and for modesty, still he was against shiflut. And shiflut b'im is not to appreciate your value, your dignity. So he was against working on specific traits, because, he said, all the midot are really intertwined. If you work to see everything from the point of view of Torah, once you see that way, so all the other details will fall in place. So this was his clear position about Musar. It has nothing to do, forgive me, with his objection to modernity. I don't see what is so modern about Musar. And I can give you examples that the Chazon Ish in his halachic teachings is much more modern and innovative than many Balei Musar who were not as, I would say, as sophisticated as the Chazon Ish, because as much as he was Tamim, he was very sophisticated and very smart. Now, the other question was about
the question is basically organized around a perception that the Chazon Ish is basically a paradox. On the one hand, you've been portraying this picture of a man who's all-loving, benevolent, humble, you know,
but
self-effacing.
But
on the other hand, he is, you know, completely able to level laser-sharp critiques of that which he opposes. And it seems difficult for the questioner, and I can well understand that, how he could simply adopt a kind of almost neutral stance toward Zionism when he was so opinionated on so many matters and didn't hesitate to offer his opinion.
Every philosopher is opinionated.
That's not an argument.
Yeah, so what do you want to opinionate? Of course he's opinionated. But as long as he's respectful, so what is wrong with having opinions? I mean, you can use those words. Let me explain.
But that's rearranging the question. In other words, the issue is not whether he's allowed to have the opinions. The issue is whether he, in fact, had them. Was he, in fact, neutral about Zionism, or did he actually have
the
strong...
The truth of the matter, he had very reasoned, clear understanding of the whole issue of Zionism and not Zionism. And of course, you will have to tell me how much time I have.
Take a few minutes.
Let me try to give you the position of the Chazon Ish in a certain way, and I can back it up with sources, of course, that I prepared. The Chazon Ish believed that in the Torah there are two different categories. One category is what belongs to us, and this is the category of mitzvah, avera. It means what we human beings are supposed to do. That's a very important point, because this will explain some other things. He feels it's prescriptive, what we must do, what we must not do. This is one category. Then the Torah contains also divine promises, many divine promises. Now, what should be our relationship to the two categories? Chazon Ish made it clear, and there are very important examples, that with regard to the category of duty, then it is your obligation. It's your chiyuv. You have to do it. With regard to divine promises, it's none of your business, basically. He would quote the Gemara, that story in Brachot in the beginning, and not going into all the details, that Hizkiyahu explained to Yeshayahu why he doesn't fulfill the mitzvah of Priyah Urviyah, because he says, I know that I will have children who are not Me'ulim, the Lo Ma'ale, they're not good children, like Menashe, that's the story. So why should I bring to the world sinful children? I don't want it. So Yeshayahu told him, Bahadei Kavshei Derachmana Lamalach. In these secrets of God, it's none of your business. Why do you have to engage yourself? Mai demifkedat ibailach lemebat. What you were ordered to do, you have to do. Mai denicha kameish maya ihilevat. What God wants to do, it's God's business. Your duty is to believe that God will know how and when to, or whether even, because sometimes you will believe, how and when or whether to fulfill the promise. You shouldn't get involved in divine promises, because he basically followed the Rambam in Igeret Teiman that he wrote to the Teimanim. I think it's an ingrained fear of messianism that he had. He felt we should not try to figure, like, you know, other rabbanim, Tkufa Gdola, or other. We should not try to define for God what he has to do. What God has to do is God's business. What we have to do is our business. I will give you more, so now becomes Shnat HaShemitah. And people don't know it, and I have to tell them. He, of course, was against the Heter Mechira. But he, on the other hand, we read in our parasha before, V'im tomru, ma nochal bashana ashvit, hein lo nizra ve'lo ne'esof et bo'atenu, ve'tziviti et birchati lachem bashana ashishit, and so and so. In other words, if you say how we will eat, I will give you the bracha. Still, the Gemara says that the rabbis left many cities in Eretz Israel, they shouldn't be kadosh, so the aniyim should be able to get maaser ani and other things. Wait a minute. If God promised in the Torah that he will bring the bracha, why didn't the rabbis trust God, that God, there will be no aniyim? So the Chazon Ish says it in clear terms, that we do not rely on any divine promise. Because promises, maybe igrom achet, the sin may, or we don't understand exactly what God meant. And he says, shvi'it, Nitcheit mipnei pikuach nefesh. Shvi'it is, I would say, suspended for pikuach nefesh, exactly like any other mitzvah. So basically we have a very coherent and a very clear picture about his approach to Zionism. He wasn't against Zionism just because... He wasn't against or for, but he was for one thing. That we have to do whatever we can to save Jews, to protect Jews, because he loved all Jews, and he said our duty. He gave many instructions for people that were in the war of Tavshin Chet and Tavshin Yud Chet, and there were problems. He said, no, you shouldn't leave, because if you leave, you will remove the border even further. You can see that he really loved Israel, loved Eretz Israel, but for some reason, there were parties and there were people who tried to convert the Chazon Ish, to kidnap him, and to make him speak their language. Thank God the Chazon Ish himself kept his integrity, and this is why we can learn a lot from him. Once we will know that his message was a message of Ahavat Israel.
Thank you very much.